recommended brand.
Just a good old boy.
We still got it, cousin. We still got it.
I'm not so sure about our old friend here, though.
Police cars just a lot faster than they used to be.
That's why I'm on Auto Trade.
Oh, look out!
Use one of them backup cameras right about now.
Wow, Auto Trader lets you search for Bluetooth, traction control.
Time to make sure the door's open.
I think they all do.
Really?
Hang on.
Will Auto Trader find our boys what they need? Stay tuned for more from the new Auto Trader. Find your car your way.
Disease, that's mostly psoriasis.
To keep away from looking at your nails because it can be. So when was the last time you had a really good look at your nails? For most of us, probably been a while, but you know, you may not be able to keep away from looking at your nails because it can be one of the most important indicators of what's happening in your body. Dr. Siegel, right? I mean, so what are some of the things that you can, you know, glean from what's going on in your body? But if you looked at my nails, my bare nails.
It's very important because, you know, we don't have to put an instrument in there, no scopes needed. We just look right at the fingernails. If they're pale, you could be anemic. If they're white, you could have liver issues. If there's a band there under your nails and it's growing or changing, I got to get you to a dermatologist because a melanoma can look like that, although that's very rare. That's a possibility. If you have blue nails, I worry about lung disease, and I track my lungers that way. If someone has lung disease and I see their fingernails getting bluer, I say, hey, maybe they're not getting as much oxygen as I like.
How blue? Blue?
Blue. Literally wow. Cyanotic. They can get very blue. We're not talking bright ocean blue, but very pale blue.
Wow.
What about those little white marks that some people get on their nails?
Well, you know, the bottom line, the importance of this segment is that as doctor, you can get tremendous amount of information. The same way that a good dentist can look in someone's mouth and find out exactly what's going on with their health, a good doctor can look at the nail and find out. So if you have the pitting one or the grooves that you see on your nail, that's mostly inflammatory disease, that's mostly psoriasis, and you want to make sure that you look for the rest of the body to find out what's going on. This blue color, which is a little, you know, kind of like dark blue, it's because there's not enough oxygen getting there. So do you have emphysema? Do you have respiratory disease that you're not getting enough oxygen?
Some sort of blockage somewhere.
Bravo. See, already she's becoming an honorary medical doctor over here. So if you have vascular disease that you're not getting there, if it's really pale, not only it's anemia or low blood count, also could be a sign of kidney disease. And so we're getting a lot of information. Now, the one that you want to know is the one that it's all a mess. It's a yellow one. It's the fungus looking. It's all out of shape. You want to make sure that you treat it and see a doctor for antifungal treatment.
And it's true. Yellow looking and very hard to treat. Sometimes we have to use oral medication. The only other thing to mention is stress. If someone's biting their nails, they can't sleep at night. I'm going to show you my nails. If you're biting your fingernails, it's a sign of anxiety or stress, and we got to deal with that.
Is there anything about how they grow? Sometimes it seems like they grow fast. Other times they seem that they don't at all.
That's a sign you're doing well. If they grow fast, it's a sign that your metabolism is.
Most dermatologists will tell you that if you see your nail is not growing, look at the calcium level, look at your vitamin E. Obviously, vitamin E is great for your hair, for your nail. And for some reason, if we don't get all of this information out because we speak fast, we're going to put all of this on the Facebook and you have all this information out there.
And women should sometimes take a break from nail polish and let their nails speak to them, if you will.
That's a great point. A lot of women that will coat their nails with finger polish all day long, we can't look at it.
You also want to see the base of the nail. That's where you get tremendous amount of information and healthy nails. nail should have a good pink color at the base of the nail. That's how you know you have a healthy one. All I can't look at your nails.
No,
right
don't look
now.
At my nails.
Take off
right
your
now.
Finger polish
right,
and come back.
Next week we'll do the eyes.
Let's show
we'll
us
do
your
the
nail.
Ears. We'll do figure it out because I bet there are a lot of clues.
Yes.
And your
yes.
PSA next week, Eric. Your
oh
PSA.
Yeah, get it done. Get it done. Thanks, docs.
Right.
Good to see you.
Always good to see you.
And that's gonna do it for us. I'm Arthel Neville.
All the terrific medical information here every Sunday. I'm Eric Schon. As always, thank you for watching.
On the BuzzMeter from New York this Sunday, President Obama blaming the media again for avoiding substance in favor of the political circus.
If you watch the news, you just see, okay, Washington is a mess. And the basic attitude is everybody's just crazy up there.
But is he using the media as a scapegoat for the problems and the paralysis? Monica Lewinsky, in her first television interview in a decade, blames the media in part for humiliating her after the affair with Bill Clinton.
To be called stupid and a slut and a bimbo and Dixie, and to be taken out of context, it was excruciating.
Did the press pile on the former intern, and should news organizations care as Hillary Clinton eyes the White House? The press had no trouble pounding President Bush. Is the briefing room different under President Obama? Former Press Secretary Dana Perino on a tale of two administrations. Plus, Facebook secretly manipulates the mood of its users by changing the information they're fed online. Why did Mark Zuckerberg think this was ethical? I'm Howard Kurtz, and this is Media Buzz. President Obama sure seems frustrated these days. He told reporters he's frustrated with Congress for not moving on immigration and says he'll take action by executive order. And the president is frustrated again with the media, saying news organizations aren't reporting on the substantive things he's trying to accomplish.
That even when Washington sometimes seems tone deaf to what's going on in people's lives and around kitchen tables, that there's going to be somebody who's going to stand up for you and your family. And I wanted to let all of you know that, because you don't see it on TV sometimes. It's not what the press and the pundits talk about.
So why does he keep taking on the press and the pundits? Joining us now here in New York, Lauren Ashburn, Fox News contributor and a former USA Today executive who hosts Social Buzz on the Fox website. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review and a Fox News contributor. And Kelly Goff, special correspondent for TheRoot.com and a contributor to The Daily Beast. Lauren, why does Barack Obama keep on banging this anti-media drum?
I think it's ridiculous. This is a guy who can snap his fingers and reporters come running right to his house and he can say anything that he wants to say, and it will be carried nationwide. It is not the messenger; it is the person. It's the person who is delivering the message. That's the problem.
The press pays house calls if you lived in 1600 right. Pennsylvania. Does the president have a point, Rich Lowry, when he says the media favor covering politics over policy and get distracted by superficial controversies?
Yes, of course.
Good.
But there's also a lot of substance covered as well, and the press would be completely delighted if every day held a real news conference, right, discussing whatever the substantive issue of the day are, but this is the take he's always had on the media. He's always had a certain contempt for the media, and there's a huge irony there because he never would be president of the United States in the first place if he weren't a media phenomenon and for a lot of superficial reasons.
You're saying he's not grateful.
He's an ingrate. I'm on the record. Write it down.
Kelly Goff, the VA scandal, the missing IRS emails, the handling of the Bo Bergdahl controversy, the mess in Iraq, none of that is exactly the media's fault.
Well, but I will say this, as someone who works for outlets that have covered both Kim Kardashian's wedding and the royal wedding ad nauseum, I'm extremely insulted that the president would insinuate that the media doesn't cover real news. But in all seriousness, of course he's right that there should be more coverage of the actual policy substantive issues and not of the horse race, which all of us are guilty of. You know, all of us are guilty of covering, you know, whether or not a potential Senate candidate has had restraining orders or a messy personal life.
What about the notion that he is blaming the press, and this is a guy who I bet people out there watching say he's gotten tremendous press, certainly for the first several years of his presidency, not to mention his two campaigns.
Look, I think there's enough blame to go around here. You know, is he he fine with the fact that the coverage isn't substantive when it's talking about how gorgeous his wife looks on the cover of Vogue magazine or when it's other things like that that are helpful? Probably. But by the same token, this is someone who, it's not just a contempt for the press, but he's not someone who likes to watch a lot of TV. He is a constitutional lawyer who would like to see policy covered every day, and it's not.
A huge irony here. On the same trip where he launches his attack on the press for being superficial and covering things that don't matter, his team takes enormous efforts to arrange these photo ops at a hamburger joint and him buying an ice cream cone. And at the hamburger joint, he has a woman who writes him a letter about her financial struggles. And what do they give her? You know, a photo op with the president at a burger joint, because they know that's what the media is going to cover, and they want the media to cover
that. But can I just say really quickly that this is something that all of us as columnists struggle with, right? It's sort of the sneaking your kids vegetables by making it look like candy. And I do think that it's less likely that her story would have been covered if he hadn't have been giving a photo op. So there is a
bit of blame
to go around. So
you're saying he's playing to the predilections of the press, which likes to have a sugary hook.
But you can't have it both ways. Our
columns are completely substantive.
You can't have it both ways. You can't manipulate the media by sitting down at a burger joint on one hand and then say they're not covering the issues that are important to the White House.
What I'm wondering is, isn't this a guy who happens to be the President of the United States who has total access to the media and therefore can shape the media narrative?
Of course he can. And it's very easy for him because a lot of people who used to work for him are now in the media carrying his water.
They're talking about David Axelrod and Robert
Gibbs. Stephanie Cutter. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie Cutter has been seen going into the White House. I mean, it's no secret, but that means he has allies in the media.
What about when he has these anchors come to the White House? The
like Mika Brzezinski came and Kate Baldwin from CNN. They came in and during the Family Values Summit basically asked him questions that agreed with his policies. Kate was a little bit harder on him than Norah O'Donnell. And
he's also had George Stephanopoulos. And the point is, as you said earlier, he can snap his fingers and deal with it. I'm wondering if you think Rich Lowry is somebody coming from the conservative point of view, whether or not the mainstream media, that broad term, are now disillusioned with second-term President Obama.
I think they are a little bit. And look, the media does need news. And the fact is, he's just stuck. You know, he doesn't have unified control of Congress. There's nothing new about his agenda. So there's really nothing new to cover. And these complaints about the media, they're old, too. He's been making these for years and years and years, and the economic policies he's talking about are exactly the same as well. And on top of all this, the things that are new are the scandals.
But this isn't just equal to him. This isn't just him. I mean, this is every president who says, I hate the media. I hate the way I'm being covered.
Right.
But in this instance, it doesn't ring true. He came out. Go ahead.
On Rich's point, he tried to make news. He had a Rose Garden news conference on immigration. And what happened?
He came out and said, I'm going to study it.
But can I draw an analogy here? This reminds me of a bit of when I got invited to cover the Women and Girls Initiative event that Hillary Clinton was hosting. And I actually went because I like writing about substantive policy issues related to women and girls. I get there, and what ends up becoming the main news story? Chelsea Clinton announces she's pregnant. And the fact of the matter is that summit on women and girls would never have gotten international news coverage had Chelsea Clinton not said she's pregnant there. Whose fault is that? Is that Hillary's fault?
Well, it's not Chelsea's fault.
But do you see what I'm saying, Howard? I think there's truth here.
You have inadvertently set me up for my next question, which is Barack Obama is not the only person who is unhappy, the only liberal Democrat, I would say, who's unhappy with press coverage. Hillary Clinton, continuing her book tour, did an interview with C-SPAN in which she said some of the coverage of her, that she didn't read much, but she didn't have time. I can understand that. But some of the coverage of her was inaccurate. Is she justified in complaining about the press?
Well, as someone who just wrote a not particularly flattering column about her, I'd say no, definitively. No, look, she's made some gaffes, she's made some missteps, and you know, she's someone who's used to being beaten up in the press, but it had been a while, right? She's someone who actually had a great comeback, where she was sort of the comeback kid, and after receiving lots of unflattering press for the first 20 years of her life in the public eye, everyone was sort of sounding the drumbeat. She's qualified, she's great, even people on other sides of the aisle. So this is the first time she's gotten beaten up in a bit, and I think that it caught her off guard.
But she's hated the media for a very long time, and she has contempt for the media, and so now she had this, as you said, great run as the Secretary of State, and when you're out of office and you're not running for president, you're going to have more favorable ratings. And so I think it really made her mad that when she came out with a new book that she was getting trashed.
Well, I would argue in the last 4 years up to the book tour, she's gotten the best press coverage
of her life. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then most of the negative coverage on the book tour, I would say, had to do with her own stumbles, most notably on the issue of her personal wealth and dead broke and all that. that?
Yeah, I think there are two things going on here, big things. One, a media narrative has been opened up on her wealth, and that is something that we'll see all the way through 2016 if she runs. Any gaffe, anything she does is going to be interpreted through that prism, a little bit the way it happened to Al Gore in 2000, right, when the narrative was he's an exaggerator. So everyone is looking for lies or things that he was exaggerating. The other thing is the media loves horse race, and right, she's such in a formidable position. For now, it's going to be Hillary versus Hillary, and the media is going to be picking at every single thing she says because there's no other story out there.
You're saying there's a hunger and a
getting
thirst
in her own way,
which reinforces what the president said about us caring more about the horse race than actual policy. And I have to say, I think the other reason she was thrown off guard by the coverage is that the reaction to my column for The Beast about her gaffes is that the Clinton brand has been so associated with income inequality, and you had liberals for the first time saying, "I'm not so comfortable with what she said." That I think for her was unexpected, and I think that was part of driving some of her anger about the.
Well, I'd like to know what she thinks is inaccurate. I mean, certainly over the years that she's been in the public eye, going back to First Lady, things have been written, some conspiracy theories have been carried in the media, but you know, what she said when she was pressed about her evolution on same-sex marriage, for example, I mean, that wasn't inaccurate. That was just some tough questions.
Well, you and I last week talked about the fact that there was a Washington Post story that had unnamed Obama sources sprinkled throughout it. So I don't think it's just inaccuracies. I think it's the way that she is portrayed in the media.
She probably had better toughen up if she's going to run for president, as we all think she is. And just to button up your point on the president, so if he's not making any news and if he continues not to be able to get much through Congress, this is going to be he's going to continue to be unhappy with the coverage.
Prepare for a lot of whining for the next 2 years.
We'll get out on that point. Let's get a break. Remember to send me a tweet about our show during this hour, at Howard Kurtz. We'll read some of your messages at the end of the program. When we come back, Monica Lewinsky is back on television and blaming the media for her humiliation. Does she have a case? And later, Dana Perino on how White House coverage has changed since she worked for George W. Bush. Her fair bill
as a pilot, then I was grounded.
Radio frequencies. I mean, it hurt. Couldn't even get up and drive, let alone teach somebody and be responsible in an airplane.
If you had chicken pox, the shingles virus is already inside you. One in three people will get shingles in their lifetime.
As a pilot, that meant I was grounded.
Talk to your doctor or pharmacist.
Monica Lewinsky is back on the media radar just weeks after writing for Vanity Fair about her struggles after her affair with Bill Clinton led to his impeachment. Her interview with the National Geographic Channel for a special on the 90s will air tonight.
To be in the vortex of this media maelstrom was quite alarming and frightening. It was and confusing. I think a lot, too, had to do with the fact that I was a woman.
Is Monica Lewinsky justified in saying, as we heard a moment ago, that the media ridiculed her as a slut and a bimbo and a ditz when she was all of 23 years old?
They did ridicule her that in that way, but look, I mean, the bottom line is if you're caught in a sex scandal with the President of the United States, especially when it becomes entangled with a high-stakes legal matter that eventually leads to his impeachment, there's going to be a lot of media attention to that. And she was called a lot of names. Part of what was going on is ordinarily the people that would kind of rally to the defense of such a woman, the feminist left, weren't interested in defending her at all because they were more interested in protecting the President of the United States.
And yet, her reputation today, here she's 40 years old, remains that of something of a bimbo, and she's trying to kind of create a second chapter. And Bill Clinton is treated like a global statesman.
Right, and you know, and I had an exclusive interview with Donna Rice for the Daily Beast, where I talked to her about this issue, and one of the points that she made was that, in her case, she was fortunate enough that Gary Hart just went away. Bill Clinton, so far, has not just gone away. And so that's created part of the challenge for Monica Lewinsky. But I also couldn't help wondering, Howard, in terms of how different things are today, how, in terms of social media, today we have sexism media media watchdogs, where literally that's all they do online, is on Twitter, is call out people for this. And I can't help but thinking that perhaps Monica would have fared better had those, you know, had they been around back then.
No, even I though think I think it would have been worse. I think it would have been much worse. I think that the amount of hate and anger that's on social media right now would have made it almost impossible for her to survive, because she couldn't respond. I mean, she had a legal case. Anyway,
right, she was being prosecuted by Ken Starr. But this is all 1998. I remember it vividly, but for a lot of people, it's ancient history. Is it still news, or is this just tabloid trash now for the media?
Get off my lawn. I'm tired of Monica. What? Get out of the spotlight. You know, look, I thought it was great for her to give an interview to Vanity Fair. I enjoyed reading it and seeing what she's done, and I sympathize with her as a woman for how she was treated and portrayed. But
you don't want to hear from her anymore.
But I don't. It's enough. You know, go on, try to make your life, and as Rich so nicely said earlier, stop whining.
But the problem with that approach is that, especially with Hillary Clinton gearing up to run, and, you know, Rand Paul, among others, have brought up the sex scandal, and Bill Clinton would be back in the White House, other people are going to talk about
That's
it.
Right.
So why should Monica not get to be part of that conversation?
Which is precisely Donna Rice's point. I mean, look, I do think that perhaps we're getting better as a culture in some ways on this. I mean, you look at Elliot Spitzer and you look at Anthony Weiner, and the women actually seem to fare a little bit better, actually, than the men in some ways with their reputation. I mean, they've gone...
No. You disagree completely.
Well, no, I mean, because people don't even remember their names in the way that Lewinsky became an actual, you know, adjective.
Elliot Spitzer, I mean, we could just...
Elliot Spitzer got a TV show. Mark Sanford got elected to Congress. In other words, often seem to recover from these things.
But Mark Sanford actually stayed with the woman he's with, who's now going to go on and be his
Argentine soulmate.
Is going to be his wife. And Elliot Spitzer, I don't want to even say her name on air, but she's gone on to have a happy life. I'm not being funny. She has a happy life. She's raising a family. I'm just saying that there, I think, people called out the double standard in a way that never happened for Lewinsky, and I think that's part of the problem.
Is this a subject that National Review will cover? I mean, is this inevitably going to be part, because everything in a presidential campaign, obviously your whole life is opened up, and it's not that Hillary Clinton is at fault for it happened, although some people remember the vast right-wing conspiracy. So is this something that will grace your pages?
Everything about Hillary Clinton's record and her role in the scandal will be dredged up from beginning to end. We've already seen it happen. And it's a little hard to tell the counterfactual of what would happen if a male intern had been caught in an affair with the president, because, you know, we'll have to wait from, I don't know, the second Clinton administration or the Warren administration or some far distant administration for that.
Is that a prediction?
Wow. Breaking news.
Yeah.
So you're going to stand by your, I don't want to hear from anymore, she should just go get a job somewhere?
I think she's made her point. She has come back and she has said, this is what happened to me, this is how I feel about it, I don't like it, and she's trying to rehabilitate herself, and I think that she needs to go on and do that.
But I think where we disagree is that as long as they're in the public eye, someone else is going to control her narrative. I think she has the right to control her narrative, and that's what she's trying to do now.
Well, I predict the media are not going to completely wean themselves from this subject, because it's a long campaign. Kelly Goff, Rich Lowry, nice to see you here in New York. After the break, Facebook conducts a really creepy experiment on hundreds of thousands of users. But first, former press secretary in the Bush White House on President Obama's media coverage, Dana Perino, is up next.
Thank you, Daddy, for defending our country.
Thank you for your sacrifice, and thank you for your bravery.
Thank you, Colonel.
Thank you, Daddy.
As what is just
about Elebrex for a body in motion.
Just got a tweet from Catherine saying, I know Hillary hates the media. Well, then she can't run for POTUS. The media is the least of your problems as POTUS. Keep them coming. Dana Perino accumulated her share of scars as George W. Bush's White House spokeswoman.
What about the substance of it, though? Do the president and the vice president feel that an attack is called for, whether someone said that in Israel or not?
Peter, I feel that I just answered that question when I talked about what our policy is.
Can you answer yes or no to that?
I just said what our policy is, and that our preference is to solve this diplomatically, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question.
It does answer the question.
So does the coverage of the Obama White House look very different from her vantage point as co-host of The Five? I sat down with her here in New York. Dana Perino, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
When you watch reporters in the briefing room these days, how different does the environment seem than when you were standing at the podium?
I think a lot of it is the same. You see a lot of different faces. When I was there, there were still some people, journalists, who had covered several White Houses, including one of my very favorites, Terry Hunt of the AP and Steve Holland of Reuters.
But same level of confrontation?
Well, probably not. I guess if you were President Obama's press secretary, you would say yes. I was there to watch Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan, and Tony Snow's briefings. A lot of those, in particular Tony's, were confrontational, but in a way where it was a good back-and-forth type of debate, and Tony Snow loved to win a debate. My briefings tended to be a little bit more clinical. Like, you ask a question, I'll give you the answer, and if I don't have it, I'll move on to and get you something by the end of the day. I tried to turn down the temperature in the briefing room a little bit. Look, that was just my style. Some people think that it wasn't a good idea, that I should have fought more.
Some people think it's good TV to fight with reporters.
I'm not for the TV thing. I think that the press secretary is for the entire United States. You are not the spokesperson for the Republicans or the Democrats. You are the advocate for the president, but you're also an advocate for the press and their access.
When you criticize the Obama administration, I sense a little bit more understanding, perhaps sympathy, because you've dealt with these problems from the inside.
Yes, and it's one of the things that I found that is wonderful about having been a press secretary is that there's not been that many. It's something like 30 or something like that. And the ones that are still here, of course, Tony Snow unfortunately passed away. But even before he died, you know, we have this nice fraternity of press secretaries because only you can understand what it was like. So now when I meet up with, say, Robert Gibbs, who was President Obama's first press secretary, we do have an amazing amount of empathy for what we're going through. And I do try to have a little bit of I think I'm hesitant sometimes to criticize because I think, well, that's not in context. I don't know if that's fair. But there are other times that I think either that we deserve the criticism or that they do.
Oh, interesting. When conservatives, some conservatives at least, say the press is in the tank for Barack Obama, if you look back at the last year after the Obamacare rollout, after the VA scandal, the IRS scandal, Boldberg Dow, and now the mess in Iraq, would you say that this president right now or in recent months is getting positive press?
They probably don't see it as positive, but I still think that it's always with like a velvet glove, okay? So they protect him from a lot of things. I'll give you one example in particular. With the IRS, that is a horrible scandal for any White House. I believe that if that had been the Bush administration, every single headline would have been Bush did this, Bush did that. When it comes to the Obama administration, all the headlines are the IRS did this. And they allow for some separation.
Isn't that in part because there hasn't been proven links between Oval Office?
During the Bush administration, anything that EPA decided, if it had to do with coal-fired power plants, that was not an EPA decision. That was a Bush decision. And it's little subtle things that are biased that I've come to accept.
So if journalists use a velvet glove for the Obama White House, what sort of glove was used for the Bush White House by the press?
Well, with spikes and nails and but that wasn't true in the briefing room itself. In my opinion, the reporters in the briefing room were very professional. They worked very hard, and they had to try to be as fair as possible. I actually thought that the briefing room reporters were very fair. I'll tell you when there was a huge difference. In 2006, when the Democrats took over the House and the Senate, and the Congress changes, and almost all of the energy and interest of the media went to Capitol Hill. That was new, it was different, and they were fighting against the administration. That was when I noticed a big difference for President Bush, because the White House reporters then had to fight for fairness for us sometimes, and they didn't always do it. But I found the White House reporters to be very fair.
With Dick Cheney and others from your administration getting pounded now about the chaos in Iraq, do you wish on some level that your ex-boss would speak out and defend his record?
I understand it. Look, this is a president who did not long for the Klieg lights. Like, he doesn't want to be on stage all the time, and he has a tremendous amount of respect for the presidency itself and for President Obama. And one of the things I loved about him was in those last 2 years, we would always be asked about, are you worried about your legacy or his legacy? And he said, in my last year as president, I read 3 biographies about George Washington. And if historians are still analyzing the first president, then the 43rd doesn't have a lot to worry about. There is an argument that says that President Bush could be more like Jimmy Carter and to criticize the people who succeed him. I don't think that would be very productive, but I understand the desire. And I wish, I'd love to hear from him too, but I get to hear from him privately.
You're a little bit, I would say, on the soft-spoken side. I'm not sure when you were the White House press secretary whether I would have picked you to be doing televised combat on the 5.
No.
Is that something
it's a
that
different
you...
role, for sure. And I always think that when I was the spokesperson, my opinion didn't matter at all. Who cared what Dana Perino thought?
No, you were a high official in the administration.
No, but I was not a decision-maker.
You were speaking for the president.
Speaking on behalf of someone else. I was supposed to defend and advocate for those
policies. Now we want to know what you think.
So it was a transition for me to come to the 5, and I appreciate that Fox News and Roger Ailes said, you know, let's give her a shot. And I was shy at first to give my own opinion because I wasn't sure I was going to. Well, I met Greg Gutfeld, and then everything changed. But I also decided that it was okay to have a career change, and I didn't have to try to straddle the fence. And what a freeing moment for me that has been.
The liberation of Dana Perino.
Yeah, right.
Thanks very much for joining us. Up next, Matt Lauer gets flack for asking General Motors CEO whether she can balance her job with being a mom. Would a male executive get that question? Plus, is the media's soccer fever subsiding now that the U.S. is out of the World Cup?
Waves don't care what age you are. Take them on the way you always have. Live healthy and take One A Day Men's 50 Plus, a complete multivitamin with 7 antioxidants to support cell health. Age? Who cares?
Honey, I'm making some extra cash as a laboratory test subject.
Oh, I'm comfortable with that. Any side effects?
When your mattress is this comfortable, you'll be comfortable with anything. Experience iComfort, featuring memory foam with dual-action gel technology. The iComfort Sleep System by Serta.
After winning 10 gold gloves, I know when I've made a great catch. That's why for over 10 years, I've used...
Comfort System by Serta.
After winning...
The new measure is meant to prove they don't contain explosives. Devices.
I show you of General Motors CEO Mary.
I hope to see you. Will not be allowed on planes, and those travelers may have to undergo additional screening. I'm Julie. Devices that won't power up will not be allowed on planes, and those travelers may have to undergo additional screening. I'm Julie. He's okay. He's now out of the hospital. The sharks stuck around for about 20 minutes before swimming away. And the Fed's taking more action against terror threats in the skies. The TSA requiring passengers at some overseas airports with direct flights to the U.S. to turn on their cell phones and other electronic devices. The new measure is meant to prove they don't contain explosives. Devices that won't power up will not be allowed on planes, and those travelers may have to undergo additional screening. I'm Julie Banderas. I hope to see you at 7 p.m. Eastern right here on Fox for Fox Report Weekend. But now, back to Media Buzz.
Matt Lauer has kicked up a fuss with a Today Show interview of General Motors CEO Mary Barra, with critics saying he raised issues that would never be asked of a male executive. Here's part of the original interview and the other day, Lauer addressing the fallout.
You're a mom, I mentioned, 2 kids. You said in an interview not long ago that your kids said they're going to hold you accountable for one job, and that is being a mom.
Correct.
Given the pressures of this job at General Motors, can you do both well?
You know, I think I can. I have a great team.
I've always felt this is not a gender issue. This is a human issue of work and life balance. It's a parenting issue for men and women, moms and fathers. Question I ask myself every single day, but clearly it still touches a nerve.
Joining us out here in New York is Lola Oganaki, a contributor to the Today Show and anchor for Arise, and Joe Concha, a columnist for Mediaite. So Matt Lauer says that he asked Mary Barra this question because she had said in a Forbes magazine interview that she had missed her son's prom because of work.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. But the reaction was overwhelmingly negative to that question, because the implication in many people's minds was that a woman's job is to first and foremost be a mother, and then anything ancillary is difficult for her to juggle. It's difficult for her to juggle both career and motherhood. And I do have to wonder if that question would have been asked of a male CEO. There have been male CEOs of GM for decades upon decades, and I doubt many of them have been asked how they've juggled fatherhood and being a CEO.
Do you think the implication was that first and foremost, Mary Barra is a mom as opposed to a very important executive of a big auto company?
Was the question sexist? And here's the thing, Howie. She brought it up in a Forbes magazine interview, so I think it was fair game. Mm-hmm. All of that said, Matt Lauer is completely disingenuous and, dare I say, dishonest in saying he would ask that question of a male CEO.
That's a really strong word.
Okay, well, I looked up the transcripts. Thankfully, we have evidence. And Matt Lauer has interviewed the CEOs of Chrysler, of Ford, and of Barra's predicessor at GM.
But did they talk about their kids in interviews?
I'm sure they did at some point. I didn't go back that far, but all of them had at least three kids, and he never asked a question about, can you be a good dad and a good CEO?
Here's why I think the criticism is a little unfair, because as Lauer said in the follow-up segment, and they brought on Martha Stewart and other female CEOs. Dads also grapple with this. I grapple with this all the time. Matt Lauer missed his son's 13th birthday because he's flying around the world interviewing Pippa Middleton and others. And so in this day and age, it is not only a question for women, but that's how it's kind of being spun in the press.
It's not only a question for women, but it is more often asked of female subjects than it is of male subjects. And I think that's the fundamental issue. And make no mistake about this, Howie, it is an issue. I mean, Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, she tweeted, "I've been up all night wondering if Matt Lauer can be a dad and have a job at the same time." And Krishan Amanpour said, "Come on, Matt, you know better. Time to stop asking such questions. Zero tolerance for sexism." So his colleagues have a problem with this question. His female colleagues have a problem with this question. So clearly it is an issue. It has struck a nerve. And it's something that's not going to go away. And I think until male CEOs and male leaders are asked similar questions, then and only then will people feel comfortable with this idea of work-life balance being an issue for both women and men.
Well, I think men should be asked similar questions, but it is also true, and they have two working parents, that when a child is sick, it's usually the mom who has to go home and deal with it, that women, you know, despite the equality that we would all hope for, you know, bear most of the burden of child raising.
I think that's changing
increasingly, especially during the recession.
Absolutely. I've been called on more than one occasion a nanny, which is the same thing as a nanny, because
right.
I try to contribute as much as I can with my daughter.
The same way, and it affects my schedule and how much I travel and when I come home and all of that. Let me switch now in our remaining couple minutes in this segment to soccer. You were on a couple weeks ago and talked about the media soccer fever. A lot of people think it's overboard. So now that the U.S. team has lost to Belgium, media dying down a little bit on this World Cup thing?
Dying down on the order.
Perhaps there sometime. Joe Concha, Lola Aganaki, nice to see you here in New York City. Coming up, Facebook devises a surreptitious scheme to manipulate your emotions. This is a really chilling story. Our digital download is up next.
Today we commemorate our Declaration of Independence, and that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Powerful words of freedom, humbly declared on this day 238 years ago. Please join me in honoring America on this Independence Day. Happy 4th of July. God bless America.
Time now for our digital download. Talk about Big Brother. Facebook now admits that it secretly tried to manipulate the emotions of nearly 700,000 users by controlling what they see in their newsfeed.
One suspecting group was shown more posts with positive words. The other group, yes, more posts with negative words in a surreptitious attempt to measure the impact on their mood.
Facebook affected my mood with this study, put me in a bad mood.
I felt violated. I felt like this is Big Brother-ish. It was just something, you know, 9,000 words of this. Terms of use, you don't ever scroll through all of that, so
just
you don't
click,
know
accept,
what they're
accept,
doing.
Accept.
Yeah, right, get me to my content. But they didn't have that in the terms of use, even if you had read it.
And initially, Facebook claimed that it did. This is a company that is so tone-deaf. So initially, Facebook said, nothing wrong with what we did. Then the lead researcher on the study said, well, I feel bad if anybody felt...
And maybe we shouldn't have done it.
And then Sheryl Sandberg, the COO, comes out and says, well, we apologize for poorly communicating about this, not for doing it itself.
Right. And I think that because everybody knows you're putting your information in there, it's out there in public, we understand that advertising is targeted to each person because of their likes and their dislikes, but there's something different about this. It's manipulating you as a person, trying to get you to change your behavior on an emotional level. It's not on a buying level.
Emotional contagion is the word. And apparently this worked. I mean, to the extent that this study means anything, people who got more negative information in their feed posted things more negatively or more positively if they got more positive information. And I just feel like, you know, this news feed is supposed to be based on algorithms. You're supposed to believe that this is not being tinkered with or biased in some way. I mean, what if Facebook decided to tinker with the news feed so that it was more pro-immigration, which is Mark Zuckerberg's position about loosening immigration rules? I mean, this is open to all kinds of abuse.
Absolutely. And the problem that I have with it is not being transparent. In news, if you are using anonymous sources, you know that you're using anonymous sources because you say they wouldn't talk on camera. But in this, you don't know that people are trying to manipulate you. With advertising on Facebook, you know they're trying to manipulate you. You know they're trying to get you to buy based on your likes.
I'd like to say that Facebook has learned a lesson from this, but
no.
Based on the company's statement,
no way.
I don't think so.
I'm going to be
a lot more wary of what I'm fed in the news feed. Still to come, your best tweets and a close call on a lightning strike leads to as blatant a ripoff as you're ever going to see in television news. Buzzworthy is up next.
But now, I don't. Excedrin is fast.
In fact, for some, relief starts in just 15 minutes. Excedrin. Headache gone.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
Well, did you know that playing cards with Kenny Rogers gets old pretty fast?
You got to know when to hold 'em. Know when to fold 'em. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. What? You get it? No.
I get the gist, yeah. Okay.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I love America. Here we get to write the script of our own life. Join me in celebrating this great country.
America, rated PG-13. In theaters now.
19 years ago, we thought, wow, how is there no way to tell the good from the bad? So we gave people the power of the review. And now Angie's List is revolutionizing local service again. You can easily buy and schedule services from top-rated providers. Conveniently stay up to date on progress and effortlessly turn your photos into finished projects with our SnapFix app. Visit AngiesList.com today.
As women, we always talk about how we should look or what's the best way to lose weight. But for me, it finally became all about how I feel. No tricks, just me. I looked in the mirror and I saw what I didn't want to see, the truth. I was 50 pounds overweight. That was a rough day. That's when I decided I had to lose weight. So I chose the only simple option for me. Nutrisystem.
Now you can lose weight even faster with a Fast 5 kit from Nutrisystem. Lose 5 pounds your first week or your money back, guaranteed.
I lost 50 pounds on Nutrisystem.
Order your 28-day My Way plan and we'll rush you the Fast 5 kit free. You'll get a week of fantastic energizing shakes, 1 week of delicious craving crusher shakes, and a free week of 21 delicious meals, and it's all free.
So why do I keep telling you about Nutrisystem? Because it works, and I know it'll work for you.
Call 888-762-DIET and lose your first 5 pounds free.
Honey, I'm making some extra cash as a laboratory test subject.
Oh, I'm comfortable with that. Any side effects?
When your mattress is this comfortable, you'll be comfortable with anything. Experience iComfort, featuring memory foam with dual action gel technology. The iComfort Sleep System by Serta.
Here are a few of your top tweets. Is President Obama justified in complaining about press and pundits? David Crush. He's got one channel willing to report the news, MSM, mainstream media covering for him since day one. The only way he can fire up the base is to blame Fox. MLD. No prez has had more hate-filled coverage than BHO, and Fox is the leader. On Monica Lewinsky saying the media portrayed her as a slut and a bimbo, Cleveland Pierce Jr. If they did at the time, they got it right. Plus, she put her business in the street by telling a so-called friend, Linda Tripp. MJ Duran, she is right. Media couldn't accept the narrative of Bill pattern of behavior and made her the bad guy. Where were the feminists?
But Howie, for a woman who wants this to go away and be behind her and out of the media, she sure is keeping it in the media.
It's the only thing she's got to sell, so there's a paradox. The more she talks about it, the more we focus on it, even as she complains about what we did to her. Now, we often think of plagiarism as a newspaper and magazine problem, but sometimes television is just as guilty. Here's a piece from Sacramento's ABC affiliate about a local man who barely avoided a lightning strike in Yosemite. The reporter is KXTV's George Warren.
You saw it and I saw it, but amazingly, the guy who shot the video didn't see it.
And there was no sense of a flash. We just knew it was very close.
At New York's WCBS, a reporter ripped off the Sacramento station's video and voices the script word for word.
CBS 2's Lonnie Quinn now with more of this incredible video and how it happened.
You saw it and I saw it, but amazingly, the guy who shot the video didn't see it.
And there was no sense of a flash.
Thanks, Lonnie.
Thank you, Lonnie. Right.
Well, you just saw it. Warren in Sacramento told blogger Jim Romanesco that he thinks WCBS got the tape through a video sharing agreement with his station has with CNN, but he still considers it unethical.
It is, and people's work gets ripped off all the time, not to this extent. I remember sitting around in meetings at USA Today, and we would watch as the headlines of USA Today would become the local news leads that afternoon.
Without credit, of course.
Without credit, they would go out and interview the same people.
What amazes me is not that the station would take the video from another station, but it takes one line to give credit. And secondly, rewrite the script to go word for word and present it on a New York CBS station as your own work. It just strikes me as horrifying.
Well, it doesn't do this reporter any good to do that, even if he was told to do it.
And the Sacramento station then didn't get credit for the story, which was, of course, widely picked up elsewhere. Well, that's it for this special Media Buzz edition from New York. Thanks for joining us. I'm Howard Kurtz. Hope you're enjoying your holiday weekend. Give us a like on our Facebook page. We post video and comments there and continue the dialogue with you. We're back here next Sunday, 11 and 5 Eastern, with the latest buzz.
I'm Shannon Bream in for Chris Wallace. Tensions in Jerusalem reach a breaking point as fighting continues after the deaths of 3 Israeli teens and a Palestinian youth.
We will bring to justice the criminals responsible for this despicable crime, whoever they may be.
Airstrikes against Hamas traded for rocket attacks from Gaza as Israeli troops amass along the border. We'll discuss with